que el ame el mar. Su pequeño huello no vuelve más.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. The time now is 1 p.m.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting today and every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. Today, I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. AutoWeek still in business, by the way. Don't believe the stories you read. We are still there, baby, and still cranking out the words, shoveling automotive news stories into the black hole of the internet, which chews them up and asks for more. I am joined this week and every week by my co-host and our staff attorney specializing in automotive law. She is a Motor Press Guild member and the owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. I'm still here, too, hanging with you, and this week with Jack Walsworth from Automotive News.
And that's a good segue into the introduction of our third wheel here. This week, we are joined by another of our favorite journalists, a guy with actual journalistic cred, full-time reporter for Automotive News, covering the VW beat and whatever else he writes about, probably a lot of things. God, the VW umbrella is pretty broad, so he's working all the time. He is from the Great Pacific Northwest. Please welcome Jack Walsworth.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. Hey, Michelle. Great to be with you both again.
Jack, there was some pretty exciting video up in your neck of the woods. Tell us what you saw.
Yes. So I'm based in Seattle. And if anyone's been to Seattle, you know that we have lots of drawbridges. And wouldn't you know, this past week, someone decided to jump a car over the University Bridge, which is near the University of Washington's campus. It's basically where Lake Washington and Lake Union meet. It's a pretty iconic bridge. Apparently, the police saw a vehicle that had been stolen, was waiting in traffic for the drawbridge to come down. And the suspect drove the Audi over the bridge. It did make the jump, but then the vehicle was later dumped about a mile up the road and the suspect got away. And as of recording, had not been apprehended, according to the local news media. But it was a very big deal here in Seattle, especially because there was a video of the jump as it so happened. So not quite the Blues Brothers, but definitely felt
Was it impressive? Yeah.
I mean, as someone who goes over this bridge a lot,
impressive?
I would say so. I mean, they landed it, so, you know, can't knock them for that. But
yeah, if you land on a downward slope, it's like, no, it's not nothing. So I'm surprised. It sounds like the car was undrivable after it made the landing.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
The local paper said it had sustained some pretty significant frame damage. So I'm guessing it was still movable, but probably just kind of died out after. But no other cars chased the stolen vehicle going over the open bridge. You should note that the police stopped it. They didn't follow.
But in the movies, they do.
I know. But next time I'm at this drawbridge, I'll keep an eagle eye out, because you never know. Now I never know if someone's going
to. But there's like a gate that comes down, right, to stop you from doing just that. So he crashed through the gate.
Yep, exactly. So they had like the railroad crossing things down, and they drove right through it and jumped the car. So
that would damage the car a lot, because those are pretty formidable barricades that come down there. It's wrong to steal cars. Okay, we are not advocating that, nor do we advocate crashing through closed gates. But I would love to do that. I think, like everybody out there, it's like 50% of the men in the survey thought they could land a jumbo jet. I think I could do that jump, no problem, and land it just perfectly and drive away.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's a fundraiser service these cities could do, is, you know, just open the drawbridge just slightly, and once a year you get to drive your car over, and if you make it, you know.
Michelle, as a lawyer, does that sound like a good idea for municipalities to raise money?
I'll get back with you.
Probably not a good idea. All right. Jack is also, there's a really cool museum up there in his neck of the woods, and there's some stuff going on there. Jack, take us to the Pacific Northwest.
Yes. So just further south of Seattle is Tacoma. And in Tacoma, if you're driving on I-5, you can't miss it. It's the LeMay Car Museum, which is this huge structure. It's super unique looking. It's definitely big from the road, but once you get inside, there's like 5 or 6 layers. And they have exhibits that come through every so often. Last year, they had a really popular exhibit. It was all about Japanese import vehicles, especially with the 25-year-old kind of more subsequent coming through. But that has went away, and they've announced what they're replacing that space with, and it looks pretty promising. It is going to be all about the American supercar. So the title of the exhibit is Birth of the American Supercar. It starts on October 25th and will run for a year. So far they've announced that Steve Saleen, as our listeners will know, will be a guest curator, and they already have a Saleen S7 in silver already at the museum. So I'm going to definitely try to make it over there. I went once this past year to see the Japanese exhibit. It was super great way to spend a Saturday. And I can't remember the last time I saw Saleen on the road in person. I don't know if I've actually ever seen one. So that of itself is worth the price of admission.
I drove a couple of them, and boy, on a racetrack, they're fantastic. They are really amazing. I mean, the grip, the road holding, yikes. But they haven't said what the other supercars are yet, I guess.
No, it looks, I mean, I'm guessing it's going to be like heavy on Americana. So I would think like 4 GTs, things of that nature. But I will go and have to report back.
Yeah, great. We'll get next time we see you, we'll get an update on that. That sounds cool. And of course, the museum, you know, the SeaTac airport is Seattle, Tacoma.
Yes.
So it's probably not very far from the airport. So if you're flying into the Pacific Northwest, why not go, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's probably less than 30 minutes from the airport. So definitely worth a quick drop.
I can endorse that. I went to the Shinka exhibit last year with my friends who live in Seattle. Enjoyed it, of course, a lot, seeing how I'm a Japanese car owner myself. And my friends enjoyed it too, even though they have Hondas. Let me think. Oh, yeah, they have a Honda and Acura, and then they just got a Ford pickup truck. But yeah, they enjoyed it too.
That's cool.
Very good. Very good. Well, Michelle, for something a little closer to home, you want to take us down to the beach down in your neck of the woods there? Tomorrow in Encinitas, the 46th annual Wavecrest Woody's Cruise.
Oh, this is the best Woody's event. 46th annual. That should tell you something right there. You get people from all over the country that come to this and make this a vacation. And as you had pointed out before we went on air, this is a 3-day event, and it kicks off. They have parties literally starting, I think, Friday night. And then they have Saturday.
That was last night, parties. Just to point out.
Yes. And then on Sunday is they have the trophies, and they have a DJ down there, and it's just an all day party at the beach. So 8 a.m. Sunday, September 21st, meet at the Encinitas City Hall on Vulcan Avenue. And they're going to do a 25-mile cruise to Oceanside. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I too have been to that. And I got to ride around in a Woody with one of the guys who, I guess he had a shop that restores Woodies down there. But that was a long time ago. That might have been 25 years ago. That might have been like I don't know, the 20th Wavecrest, but it is a good show. So, and while if you're listening to this right now, you have like an hour and a half to get there. So if you're driving up I-5 and you're going past Encinitas, cut off the freeway.
Right. If you're sitting there on the 5 in horrible, just go down to the beach and don't sit there in horrible traffic. Go to Encinitas.
Yeah.
And there's tons of places to eat too, by the way. I love that place. It's really fun, and all of the Woodies are—they're not just American; they're all kinds, and they're in all kinds of conditions. You will see some patina, a lot of patina, should I say? Yeah, and you'll see some of those jollies that they used to use to transport people to the hotels in the San Diego area. They have some of those out there. It's just really, really fun and really beachy.
All right. What's that movie? Same time next year or something. Was it Jack Lemmon?
Yep.
And it's on the Italian Riviera, and they have a Woody. The hotel has like a Fiat, right? Like a It's not a Fiat Jolly. It's a little bit stretched. Like maybe it's a stretch Jolly. Anyway, yeah, all kinds of cool Woody's down there. You can still catch it if you're driving by Encinitas, but you can also go tomorrow, Sunday, September 21st, 8 a.m. at Encinitas City Hall on Vulcan Avenue for a 25-mile cruise to Oceanside. All right. A little bit far in the opposite direction, up, way up by Bakersfield. It's still going on this weekend. It's called H-Day. They are saying, nobody else is saying, it's the world's largest gathering of Hondas and Acuras. First time on the West Coast, which is why in their poster they call it Cali. Nobody here calls it Cali. Jack, you would never call it Cali, would you?
Never. Nope. Couldn't do it.
Good. Good. Yeah, that's like, good job.
It's like calling Washington what? Washy?
Or calling San Francisco Frisco. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay, but that is going on September 20th and 21st at Famoso Dragway in Bakersfield. Of course, that was the site of the great drag racing in the 50s. The fuel meets would go up there, and all the drag racers made their name at the Famoso Dragway. This weekend at Famoso Dragway is H-Day, where you can see Hondas and Acuras. The address is a long one, 33559 Famoso Road in McFarland, California. There will be drag racing, car show, giveaway cars, lifestyle stage, DJ, vendor midway. Go to hday.com. $35 Saturday, $45 Sunday. Another fun thing, if you like motorcycles or if you like human beings, go to the Moto Social Wednesday, September 24th. That's down in Michelle's neck of the woods in Costa Mesa. Yeah. They move it around all the time. I've been to them up here. Just really nice people, really cool motorcycles. A lot of them are stock. Some of them are customized. It's just a fun group. This is going to be Wednesday, September 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. 2145 Placentia Avenue, Costa Mesa, California. Speaking of down south, anybody know anything about the OC car show?
Nope.
Can't say I do.
They are doing the worst job ever of reaching out to people. They rented out the entire Anaheim Convention Center for a car show, and I have not heard anything about it. So anyway, it's going on September 25th through 28th. That's all we have. That's all the information we have. I think if you Google OC car show, maybe you'll come up with something. We didn't. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Try harder, OC car show. All right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't even know what manufacturers are going to be there, or if they're going to have test drives, or if they're going to have, they usually have a sort of a vault where they have a bunch of really awesome trekked out, you know, turboized cars, whatever you want to call them. They have some really hot cars in a section, usually. I don't know if they're doing any of that this year.
The LA Auto Show just came out with what cars they're going to have. They had a huge long list. Of course, we'll get that. That's mm-hmm. November 21st yeah. through 30th. They have lots of information about that. Go to laautoshow.com. We'll be talking about that over and over and over again in the coming weeks and months, but that's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth going to just that to one... do the Jeep thing where you go up that really steep pedal ramp and then down that steep ramp.
The ride on is really fun. It's fun to watch too, even if you don't do it. It's fun
and
to
the
watch.
Subaru guys bring the puppies. It's it's just fun. All right, we're gonna do Volkswagens next because, as you know, there's a, well, you might not know, the SoCal Vintage VW meet, as near as we can tell, starts on September 28th, the weekend of September 28th in Orange, California. It's called SoCal Vintage Treffen. It's limited to 1961 and earlier. This is for the September 28th part of it. Small taillight, Beetles and buses. That night, Friday night, Friday night, September 26th is at Eddie and Dave's Garage, 800 West Barkley in Orange from 6 to 9 p.m. is sort of the kickoff of the Vintage VW Treffen weekend. So go there and kick that off. On Saturday for that weekend, there's a Speedwell Rally which costs $40 to enter. Meet at 8 a.m. Check that out. Sunday, SoCal Vintage VW Treffen. Again, the gates open at 7 a.m. This is the big show, Sunday the 28th, I believe. Gates open at 7 a.m. Car show registration opens at 8 a.m. German food truck arrives at 9 a.m. And that is going to take place in Lakeview Park, Blue Diamond Hall Road in Orange, California. If you want to see the actual information instead of the mangling of it that I just gave you, go to buggin.com/treffen, T-R-E-F-F-E-N. And for another member of the Axis Powers, Machinissima 3 is being held September 27th in Rolling Greens, downtown L.A. It is a cool, it's a curated Italian car show. So it's just like the Best of France and Italy, which is also coming up, I think, in November. That is not curated. You pay your money, you show up, you're in. The Machinissima is put together by Mike Baum and a great group of volunteers. And my Lancia Appia will be there. So you can come and see the glory. Behold the glory, as our friend Charles Phoenix says. That is taking place September 27th, downtown LA. The address is 1005 Mateo Street, Los Angeles, 90021. If you want more information, you'll never spell this. Machinissima.com, machinissima.com. It's a word that they made up, and they weren't particularly worried about getting people to write it down as they're listening to the radio driving their cars. Keep trying. You'll eventually get it right. Machinissima.com, September 27th in downtown LA. It's a ton of fun. Anybody like trucks?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Whoever likes trucks, read the next one.
September 26th and 27th, the Grand National Truck Show is coming to town. Which town?
It's Pomona. It's the same place as the Grand National Roadster Show. So it's in the Fairplex in Pomona. And it's all trucks all the time. I have never been to this. I guess it's been around a few years now. Same guys who put on the Roadster Show put on the Grand National Truck Show. Same location, September 26th and 27th. Go to rodshows.com. I think you can buy tickets there, get directions, get everything you need. Should be fun. Everybody likes trucks, don't they?
Well, yeah, and that's sort of the next frontier for people like, you know, Dave Kindig and those guys who like to customize, right? Jack it up and trick it out.
Yeah.
All right.
There's all kinds of subcultures in the truck culture.
Uh-huh. Right.
All right. Let's quickly go through a couple of other things. Triumph Motorcycles is promoting National Dealer Demo Day, September 27th, 10 to 3. You can get a scrambler, get a free ride and a scrambler. And the address is 515 West Lambert Road in Brea, California. You can call them at 714-256-6700. Lots of scramblers. They got the 1200X or XE, the Scrambler 900, and the little diminutive Scrambler 400X and XC. I've driven that. You can Google AutoWeek Triumph Scrambler and read my review. And, you know, click on it several times. Pretend you couldn't quite get it right.
At AutoWeek.com.
Thank you for that. If you want more information about this Triumph tour, go to TriumphOnTour.com. And are we out of time here? Well, now let's keep going. September 28th, Arts Center Design Invitational, September 28th. It's a really cool car show. Go to artcenter.edu and just follow the prompts. What else? There's a couple things I want to get in people's radars. The Japanese Classic Car Show, Saturday, October 11th, Marina Green Park, Long Beach City. Same day as the Willow Springs Grand Reopening, October 11th. Up at Willow Springs. It's all day. I think it's 10 to 4. Get tickets at eventbrite.com. Then Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E. That's it. We're calling time. We're going to go straight to the news. And for that, we're going to go to our buddy Jack Walsworth up in the Pacific Northwest, because he specializes in Volkswagen. Did you just do a big story on this, Jack?
Yeah. So one of the things I had in this past week's paper was a 10-year anniversary story on the Volkswagen diesel crisis. Notice I didn't call it Dieselgate, because that's a journalism thing. We don't just call things something gate because of Watergate. But anyways, so for folks that might recall the diesel crisis, it kind of entered the public realm on September 18th, 2015. That was when the EPA and the California Air Resource Board, or CARB, issued official notices of violation against Volkswagen over some of its diesel engines. So for those that at home remembering, this is basically when it was outed that Volkswagen had been cheating with their diesel emissions, and that their 2-liter engines that were offered in the U.S. were actually emitting much, much more emissions than what was claimed.
But Jack, I mean, like the guy who jumped it was an Audi who jumped over the bridge, right? And I would say give him a pass on that. The way they got around the testing was so clever that I think they should have just let him go. What do you think?
I mean, it was clever, but at the same time, it was fraud.
It was illegal.
It was illegal. And
like bridge jumping, we cannot advocate cheating on your diesel test.
To Mark's point, some engineers had created what essentially was a defeat device, and that when a Volkswagen diesel was in a lab testing, the car could tell that it was in a testing environment and it would emit far less emissions. And it was super, that was the whole thing was clean diesel, and it was, it was living up to that. But there was some researchers out at West Virginia University that tested diesels in the real world. And when they compared their numbers with what Volkswagen was disclosing, it was like 40 times the amount of emissions. So like, obviously, something was going on. That is kind of what kickstarted everything, that those researchers had started work, quite a bit before this was out in the public. But this was easily the largest automotive scandal of my lifetime, probably for several generations. I mean, this was something that Volkswagen, for a long time in the U.S., diesel was going to be their way to increase market share. That's something they've always wanted to do. Diesel was going to be their, that was going to be their light forward. And it was a way to introduce something that most automakers in the U.S. didn't offer. It wasn't, diesels were available, but they weren't, they weren't super common.
I remember driving those and I loved them. It had lots of torque. They were fun. You could get a manual transmission. It was a blast. Did you ever drive one, Jack?
I did not. But I had a coworker, Mike Colias. He's now with Reuters, but he had a 6-month-old Gulf Sportwagon TDI when this whole thing broke. And Mike at the time wrote this really good column about how he basically felt duped. He felt like a sucker and kind of had this ecological guilt, because part of why he bought it was, yes, the high MPGs, but it was, it was supposed to be a clean emitting car. And, Mike, like many hundreds of thousands of Volkswagen owners, found out on September 18th that this was not, this was not to be. And then, of course, it later included some other engines, some Audis and Porsches, but the main gist of it was these Volkswagen diesels.
And remind me, what did they buy back all of those?
Yeah, I believe so. I think if you had a diesel, you were given an offer of you could get the vehicle bought back, basically be made whole in some ways. I talked with a couple of dealers for this story, and they said a lot of owners did pretty well because they got their car bought back. They got paid fairly well.
Did they fix those diesels that they brought back, or crush them, or what happened to them?
It depends. I think some were fixed, some were crushed, because Volkswagen did eventually come out with a repair, which again gave dealers some business because they didn't have as much business. So it kind of depends. But one thing that really sticks out to me from this crisis, which again, it's already been 10 years, was there was 37 sites across the U.S. where these turned in diesels went. At the time I was living in Metro Detroit, the Silver Dome in Pontiac, where the Lions used to play, had been abandoned. The parking lot became one of the storage yards. There was a storage yard out in the California desert. I think there was one out in Baltimore that, they're kind of spread out all over the country. And I think for a lot of people, that's kind of this lasting image, is just like a parking lot full of cars that still had the license plates. They still had, people, the things in them that they just wanted out and whatnot. But, it's a super interesting anniversary, because Volkswagen today is still, generally speaking, a smaller player in the U.S. market, despite being the world's second largest automaker. They're still at about the same market share as they were 10 years ago. It's a little bit over 2% right now. Their sales in 2024 were about 380,000. In 2015, they were about 340,000. So like it's, the numbers really aren't that different, which is interesting. What's also interesting, you know, 10 years later, Volkswagen's lineup is almost all crossovers. They have a few, you know, they sold the GTI and the Golf R and the Jetta, but you know, it's been a whole flip. Back when this crisis started, they had only two utility vehicles, the Tiguan and the Touareg, which, if you guys remember, weren't necessarily designed up for American consumers. They were very much European vehicles that had been brought over. So, you know, to Volkswagen's credit, they have brought out vehicles like the Atlas that are specifically for U.S. customers.
Right.
But the customer base really hasn't grown with them as other brands. And part of that's also because Volkswagen went very heavy into electric vehicles, which was kind of part of their penance, so to speak, from the diesel crisis, was that they had to commit a lot to electrification. As we all know, the EV market has not necessarily taken off like a lot of automakers projected, including Volkswagen years ago. And really right now, all Volkswagen has in the US is the ID4, which is fine. The sales have never topped 40,000, and the ID Buzz, which is a very niche, you know, small volume vehicle. So
yeah. Well, how many Buzzes are they selling?
We only have numbers through the second quarter of this year. And I think including part of last year, it's like less than 4,000. So it's,
oh man, it's not terrible.
It's not that
much. I would totally buy one, but I'm not going to spend 70 grand on it.
Yeah.
Anything.
So it's an interesting anniversary. You know, it, like I said, it's definitely something that it was, I had just started, I was an intern at the time, and I just, the newsroom those days was nuts. And I, no other auto publications went through the same thing where it was just like, you couldn't believe the stuff that was coming out and the things that the executives were saying and what came to light, you know. And this, it cost Volkswagen over $30 billion. Who knows what they could have done with that money had that not happened. And, you know, they, it's, you know, it's a big what if, but it's just a super interesting story. But, you know, for the US, it's unfortunately part of Volkswagen's past now. And it's just kind of part of their identity.
What do you think, if this scandal, say it hadn't been discovered, or if they didn't cheat, what would Volkswagen be like in the US now? Would they, cause they never really grasped the US market, ever. I mean, after the Beetle and the original van, they never really, you know, in modern times, 80s, 90s, 2000s, they didn't really get the US market. And they thought there was perhaps a little bit of arrogance on their part. You know, we have built these great cars. If you don't appreciate them, that's your fault. And that's a great marketing plan. I mean, what do you think would have happened had they not had the Dieselgate scandal?
That's a good question. I mean, I think they would have kept with the diesel tech, but I think it would have gone over into more crossovers than utility vehicles. You know, at the time they had a Jetta, they had a Golf Sportwagon, you know, things like that. I think American preferences still would have shifted to crossovers and SUVs. So maybe we would have just seen an Atlas with a diesel, or maybe the Touareg lives on. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's an interesting thought because, you know, you would think, I think if the diesels had been clean and they had been everything that they were supposed to be, I think that could have been, an offering that Volkswagen could have really owned in the US. And, you know, maybe their numbers, that's how they grew their numbers. I still don't think they would have ever become like this larger, big player that they are still trying to be in 2025. But, it, you know, it's hard to say. I feel like consumer preferences still would have shifted, but maybe the diesel just would have been put into American-sized vehicles. And that's also a crazy thought, you know, an Atlas with a diesel, you know, what kind of mileage that would have gotten.
That would like be that. Great. I got to drive the V10 Touareg diesel in Germany, and it was just fantastic. I just loved it. I mean, Audi won Le Mans in a diesel, in a V10 diesel, you know.
Yep.
I think that technology, like, what's really wrong with the technology? Is it particulate emissions, or why are diesels kind of basically gone from the U.S. market?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, like outside of some larger full-size pickups and maybe even some SUVs, I really can't find a diesel. And I did go back and look. Volkswagen never, once the scandal broke, they never introduced the new diesel model in the U.S., which was interesting because that was not part of the plan.
One of the most fun vehicles I ever drove in my entire career was a Nissan Micra diesel with a manual transmission. It was it was loaded with torque. It handled so well. You know, it was obviously a Japanese spec, so it wasn't a U.S. spec car, but it was just a blast. I mean, I think diesels are fun. In fact, one of the other most fun that I ever had was a, was it a diesel? My mind, the mind's the second thing to go. But anyway, let's just.
Well, I was going to say that diesel also back then was cheaper than regular gas. And yeah, so people were interested in those. I remember a lot of friends saying they wanted the diesel GTI because it was a really fun little, you know, hot hatch type of car, but you could get good mileage out of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, one of the dealers I talked with is based in Amarillo, Texas, so kind of in the panhandle. And back then, you said a gallon of diesel in his market was about $2.20 a gallon. And they would run advertisements to consumers that they could drive from Amarillo to Dallas and back for $20. And people would just fly through the door because they were like, okay, I want that deal because I drive a lot. I wanted something that gets this kind of mileage and spend this kind of gas money. So
yeah,
definitely not the brightest moment in Volkswagen's recent history, but you know, definitely part of the story for sure. So,
and I do think it had a lingering stain among customers. It was a very, very well publicized escándalo, you know, and people knew, the average customer knew about it. It wasn't one of those they could sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. And I talked with an analyst, Paul Waddy from Auto Pacific. I'm sure Mark has chatted with him. And one of his points was that, you know, for a lot of American consumers, it wasn't so much the act of getting caught, it was the deception and trying to cheat is what people really turned off by. And he said too, you know, that kind of sticks with people a decade later. So
yeah.
So I always thought in the back of my mind that it somehow had something to do with the Ferdinand Piëch, who was the other big executive, the guy from Audi who then took over Piëch and kicked him out. I thought it was that scandal, but it's not related to that at all. It's just the West Virginia guys figuring out that they were cheating.
Right.
But you could blame Piëch because Piëch probably said, get out there and solve this problem. I don't care how you do it or you're fired. He loved firing everybody. So in my mind, that's what I think happened.
I believe the genesis of it was that, you know, these engineers in Germany were given a deadline or a goal to meet and they couldn't do it and they had to do something. So that's what.
It's not physically possible to do. I mean, there's particular matter that comes out. There's NOx. The Europeans, we try to control for NOx here in California because it causes smog, and they do CO2 emissions because that's what, you know, they're about saving the earth and global warming. And so there are two different standards and you can't get it to do both, I guess.
Does Volkswagen still sell diesel in Europe or elsewhere?
That is a good question. I don't know. I need to look into that. They obviously don't sell here or Canada.
Right.
I would think they probably still do. But
diesel was a huge thing in Europe forever because I guess it was cheaper and people liked that. And there was also in like Italy and other countries, if you had an engine that was smaller than 2 liters, you got some kind of tax break. Mm-hmm. So if you got that engine and it was a diesel, then you were saving a lot of money and they were fun to drive. It's just torque. It's cool.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I always love Volkswagen. I owned 2 VW Bugs in the 70s and they were always economical. And living in LA, they were easy to park because they were small. I could park them at the sorority driveway. No problem. I always thought small cars make sense to me.
Speaking of college, I remember in my day, there was somebody was driving up. There used to be a thing at USC. You drove up to the Stanford game or you drove up to the Cal game, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody had a Volkswagen diesel Rabbit, it was called at the time. And they got 53 miles per gallon or something, or 56. And it was just unheard of. It was crazy. And so, I mean, maybe that was my start in automotive journalism. Was there, wow, you got that mileage? Cool.
And you were all jealous.
I just was impressed by it. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Is that it, Jack? We covered that?
Yep. Yeah. So it's been 10 years. It's quite a story.
Your full story is at?
Yes, autonews.com. And we are running a subscription special right now for 100th anniversary of the newspaper. So please check it out.
How much can you get? What's the price for that?
That is currently $100 off. So I think that brings it to about $199 for an annual subscription.
I paid several months ago $200, Jack, to subscribe to your magazine. Just digital access only and none of the data.
Right.
I saw Wes Rainel, your colleague, just today, in fact, and I was harassing him about that. And I think he was mildly irritated, which, you know, success. Yay. All right.
Well, I misspoke. It's 150 a year with the special. So
there you go. 150
a year. Help me stay employed.
Right.
All right. Yes. Every nickel goes right into Jack's new car.
Paycheck.
Fund.
Yes.
Yep,
yeah.
For sure.
Oh, I jacked a new car.
We did see on Automotive News on their Facebook that a lot of celebrations that they just recently had for their 100th. So
100 years. Isn't that crazy?
It's kind of a pretty cool year for sure. So yeah,
we saw a lot of changes. A lot of changes in 100 years.
Yep. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. But it's still print. It's still a paper. There's print and the website.
Yep. Yep.
In addition to a whole bunch of seminars and webinars and all kinds of things.
Any interest in auto retail, it's a place to be.
It is a multimedia extravaganza of automotive journalism.
Oh, and I have a spy shot to sell you.
Oh, there you go. Even better.
Oh, yeah. Michelle shot. What was it? We figured out what it was, right? Or you figured it out.
At first, I thought it was a Rivian because I live like 5 minutes away from Rivian headquarters. But it's a Kia, which is 10 minutes away from here. So, yeah, we figured it out. I finally zeroed in on
which Kia?
Oh, it's a big one. It's sort of like a Honda Passport. It's a three row, you can tell. And it's got a ginormous thing hanging in the back.
Okay. I wonder if that's the redesigned Telluride, because we haven't seen that yet.
So exactly. See?
That could actually be something.
How much? Come on.
Yeah.
Have your people call my people.
Yeah. You don't still buy a spy phone, do you?
We do.
You do?
We do.
Shelf, we're making money. Yep. Maybe you do it in exchange for a subscription that includes the data. And I think that would be worth it.
Yes.
Jack will start filling out the paperwork for that.
Excellent.
We'll get that going.
All right.
Well, thank you for that report, Jack. Always good to have an actual reporter with actual reporting on the car show. And moving along. So last week or 2 weeks ago or something like that, we reported that Angeles Crest Highway was open all the way to Wrightwood. And I took a drive on it and I really loved it. And it was great. It is now closed again.
Yay.
So it is closed the same place as it was closed last time, from Islip Saddle to 5 miles west of Big Pines. So you can drive all the way up to where the 39 connects to it, and then the gates close. So they are saying, due to emergency repairs, motorists are advised to use an alternate route. So good luck, motorists. That's too bad, because it was wide open and empty. There were almost no knuckleheads up there, as opposed to the west end of Angeles Crest Highway, where there's 15 knuckleheads per mile on the west end of it. But the east end, we're hoping that our buddies at Caltrans District 7 get that done. And I know that they will. And good luck to them. And we will let you know if we hear that it's open again. It's also Highway 1 is still closed north, south of Big Sur. So keep that in mind. Okay, Corvette news. Michelle, you want to do Corvettes?
Oh, well, Corvette, just briefly, people, if you have a 2023 model year through 2026 Corvette that's a Z06 or a ZR1 model, you might need to check and see if there's a recall on that, because there's been some fires that have occurred at the gas stations because there is a cooling fan that doesn't quite shut off as it's supposed to when you turn off the motor. So while you're pumping gas, this cooling fan that's located right underneath the fuel port tends to spin the gas into the hot engine components.
Wow.
And then you go boom. So
haven't been any booms, have there?
There have been fires.
Fires, but not explosions.
Right.
Still, that's pretty terrifying.
Is there a distinction?
Car on fire in a gas station. How far can you run before you're safe from that?
So you're thinking, I spent $100,000 on this nice, beautiful Corvette, and now people are laughing at me because it erupted into flames while I was getting gas. Not your finest moment as a car owner.
No.
So check into that. GM has recalled 23,000 of them. Hopefully, our listeners are not one of those 23,000.
Did you know that you can get? I remember when the current C8 was launched, you could get into one for 65 $1,000. And now you can still get into one for $71,995. That includes a destination charge. That's interesting. A little bit of Corvette trivia for you there. You can also spend well into the six figures. What is that, the top crazy fastest one that's not out yet? ZR1X or something?
I think those are like 200 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing is really awesome. And I have a friend that is getting married, and she's threatening her fiance with, if you don't buy me one, I'm not marrying you. And so I have told her to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky and get all, I told her exactly what to do.
I'm not predicting success. I'm no marriage counselor, but you have that guy's phone number. Jack and I can call him.
I know.
Get him to call into the show. We'll talk him down. Okay. I don't care how good looking she is or how much, but you're going to be miserable, man. It's not going to work out. All right.
I will keep you
so,
posted.
Yeah. Check with your Corvette dealer or go to NHTSA.gov, NHTSA.gov for all your recall needs. It's always good to check in there every now and then at NHTSA.gov.
Yeah, and we proceed. Not to, you know, talk too much about recalls, but that one seemed to be very important.
Flaming Corvettes is a big deal.
Flaming Corvettes on the car show. Yes.
Fireball Corvettes. Okay.
And also, by the way, so to avoid your barbecue, and also HOV lanes. We've talked about the HOV lanes in California where the sticker program, if you had a low emissions vehicle, you could get a sticker. You could drive in the carpool lane by yourself without getting a ticket if you had the sticker. Well, that is ending at the end of this month, September of 2025. However, I've learned that the CHP is going to give us a grace period on this for 2 months. So you won't really get a ticket. Yay.
But does that mean that they're going to pull you over and talk to you?
Yes.
And can they talk in a condescending tone?
Of course.
Okay.
So you're going to say, oh, thank you, officer. Thank you.
2 months grace period. Okay.
I didn't realize that it expired.
So what are those?
For telling me, and I will not drive in here again. The effective date when the program ends is September 30th of this month, you know, this month of 2025. But your extra 30-day grace period will expire on December 1st.
Okay.
Okay. So take that with whatever you want to do with that information. I didn't hear a thing, Mark.
Okay. It says they will be educating the motoring public.
Yes. Educating means bitching you out, but that's, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
That's educating in quotes.
Yep.
Is the state or is CARB going to do anything about the unsightly blemishes left on the car paint because of those old stickers that expired so quickly?
Ooh, I smell a class action lawsuit.
Let's get together. My Mitsubishi iMiEV is gone down in value because of the unsightly paint blemishes left by the this was the original white and black and white sticker.
Mm-hmm.
And peeling those off.
That you voluntarily bought?
No, you get them when you buy the car, I think. I don't remember.
Well,
a long time ago.
Yeah, you have to buy them and specifically put them on your car. You know?
So pretty soon, it's just going to be in those carpool lanes, just going to be the rich people with the express things on them. It's no longer a high occupancy vehicle thing to try and make people to make transportation more efficient. It's just rich people. Am I wrong? Am I right?
Well, there's you're thinking of toll lanes.
But I know, but aren't they converting some of the high occupancy vehicle lanes to toll lanes or
not? Not immediately. No. So they'll be free for the time being. The toll roads. So you've got the 241 here in Orange County and you've got a couple others.
Right.
There's the 91 in Riverside has that program where you buy your way into those carpool lanes.
Right.
Which is worth every penny. If you're on the 91 every day, it's worth it. But no, on the 405 and 5, they don't have that yet. Or the
Jack, do you have toll lanes up in Seattle?
We do. There's a couple stretches. There's a bridge that goes over Lake Washington. It's a toll bridge. And then there's a tunnel that goes under downtown. 99 is also a toll. And there's a couple other spots too, but generally speaking, there's not tolls. But fun fact, the Washington tolls are not compatible with any other toll pass in the country. So I still have a Illinois pass from my days in Illinois. And when we moved out here, it did not work. So I had to get a Washington State sticker.
Yeah, it's all a money-making scam.
Yep.
And only the rich guys will get to drive in these lanes, I'm telling you. Is that how it is, though? It's not a high occupancy vehicle. It's not an HOV lane. It's a paid expressway.
Yeah. Yep, it's paid. And then yeah, there is one stretch of HOV that you can use if you have a toll pass on your car.
But now,
that is common.
Another good story. I'm sure people always tell you great stories that you should write. But weren't all these lanes built on existing freeways? And why is a private company profiting and excluding drivers from what was a public thoroughfare? How's that possible? There's your story. There's your next. I sniff Pulitzer.
Yep. There you go.
You need a legal consultant on that one.
Yeah. It ain't right. It just ain't right. If they build their own highway, sure, that's fine. But if they just take a lane from an existing highway that was built with our tax dollars, that ain't
with
right.
With consent of the state.
With the consent of certain lawmakers who I ain't saying.
Pay to play? Pay to play.
I ain't saying nothing. That was Michelle who said that last phrase. All right. All right.
Okay. Are we ready for reviews?
Speaking of great cars, Jack's got some updates on the fabulous, another Volkswagen, the fabulous Tiguan, or as Wes Reynolds says, Tiguan.
Yes.
Tiguan.
So the Tiguan got redesigned for the 2025 model year. That was a pretty big deal. It's only the third time it's been, or it's the third generation. So it's, you know, significant. It's historically been Volkswagen's bestseller here in the U.S. It's made in Mexico, so tariffs obviously play a role. But Volkswagen did launch the car like they had planned back in May. Mark and I actually got to drive it out in beautiful Bozeman, Montana. And initially, Volkswagen said this is the price, and this is what they kept the price stable for May and June. Turns out, I just learned this past week, they actually raised the price of the Tiguan and a couple other models also made in Mexico back in mid-July. So the Tiguan will now be up, had an increase of at least $750, including shipping. So that's going to be, I should know this, a little bit over 30 grand and change. They haven't actually released the 2026 model year pricing yet on the Tiguan. That should be coming out here in the next month or so as they roll out the 2026. It's kind of weird because they launched the 25s in May. That's kind of atypical. But long story short, if you want to buy a Tiguan, 2 months ago was the time to buy it because the pricing just went up. And, you know, it's possible they will just take the updated 2025 pricing and move it over with 2026, or they might raise it again. You know, it's as we live in this tariff environment where things are changing so quickly, I don't envy the product planners and the pricing analysts at these companies because, you know, it's changing very quickly.
Is that price increase due solely to tariffs, or is it just like as the model year changes, they increase the price, or what is it?
So Volkswagen would not comment to me about that. I did ask them if this was because of tariffs. They declined to comment. But, you know, I think historically there are price increases with the model year changeover, but this one's kind of weird because it was just redesigned. So, like, in theory, the increases that you would have paid for the model year changeover would have already happened. So now it's kind of like nothing really changed. If you bought Tiguans that were on the lot July 1st versus July 15th, they were the same car, but the price went up. So
same car.
Logically, it's tariffs, but not official.
But they're not saying. Nobody's saying. I talked to my friends there at Pro Italia, the motorcycle shop, and I say, how much of the cost of this is in is due to tariffs? And they say, we have not figured out the tariffs. Nobody can figure them out. Heard that from other, you know, people in the auto industry, is it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly what they're supposed to pay for each model because there's a lot involved, right? You have to figure out how many parts are made in America and sourced in America from material that was sourced, you know, wherever. I mean, it's really complicated, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah, very, very complicated. You know, things are moving very quickly. You know, we're still waiting on the US-EU deal to be finalized. It's been announced now for, I think, late July. So it's been out there for a while where the tariff rate would go down from 27.5% down to 15, which is significantly more than what it was before the tariffs began. But, you know, a lot of these European automakers are really counting on that, because, you know, if you're a Volkswagen or an Audi and you're bringing in something and it's facing 27.5% tariff, that's a significant cost, which, you know, I think a lot of these companies won't really talk directly about tariffs or how they're handling it, but they, for a while, were saying like, oh no, we're not going to pass it on to the customer. But now I think we're starting to see more execs say, no, this is, you know, we can't pay for this on our own forever. It's not sustainable. So, if you're in the market for shopping for a vehicle, definitely keep your eyes peeled on prices, because they could be changing tomorrow for all we know.
Yeah, we're hearing that there's that the auto sales are actually huge for the last, you know, 30, 60 days.
Yeah, the last couple months have been very active, I think largely because people wanted to get in before prices went up. And, you know, I think they'll be curious what happens at the end of the year if we have a bit of a hangover, because all these people that would have bought towards the end of the year pushed their purchase up. But definitely stay tuned to autonews.com for that. We'll be documenting every month and quarter sales reports for sure. So
autonews.com, your source for everything except what is in autoweek.com.
Exactly.
So. And on the car show.
Yep.
And the car show, which cribs from both sources and any other source we can get. Yep. Speaking of which, this one is from autoweek.com. I just did it. Remember the Supra, the Toyota Supra? It is a, it started out as the Celica Supra.
Oh, yes.
And it went through five different generations. The fifth generation is on its way out. I think production ends, it's made in Austria, and it ends in May of 2026. So sort of to, I don't know if they could say commemorate the end of it, but Toyota came out with the final edition Mark V. So that's MKV, which looks almost like my initials, but anyway, they were only selling about 2,600 of these a year. So very, very low volume. You look at the auto industry and a car, and that's in the United States, a car in the U.S., you know, the big ones. I remember when, Ford Taurus in the 80s was selling like over 500,000 cars just of the Taurus lineup. Way back in the 60s, the Chevrolet Impala, was selling 1 million a year. And I think that's the all-time record outside of, you know, the Soviet Union, when you could only buy one car. But this one, these small specialty segment cars like the Supra were selling only 2,600 a year. The nearly identical BMW Z4 was selling just over 2,100 a year. So it's not a profitable thing. And you think, well, it had to have peaked at some point. Yeah, it peaked in 2021. They sold just under 7,000. So these numbers are minuscule. It's a rounding error for, you know, the Ford F-150 or some other mega seller like that. So it's a very niche market for these. So I think that is the main reason why they are discontinuing it. Plus it was this particular model, the Mark V, was new in 2019. So that's a fairly long product cycle. What is that? 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. it's at the end of its life, no matter how you look at it. Toyota is not saying, or they're not even speculating. If you ask the Toyota guys, they say, oh, I don't know if there's another one coming. I think you could assume that somewhere down the line, there'll be another one. But it's getting harder and harder to justify these things. You see a lot of these partnerships, for instance, Supra's the same as the Z4 and the Subaru BRZ and the Toyota 86 are the same. You know, these fun, cool little cars that don't sell a lot are still, they're still fun for people like us, for people who listen to the car show and people who write about cars and just love sporty cars. So somebody's got to figure out a way to do it. I guess the way to do it is to amortize the investment in the development of the new car over like 10 years. How long has the Miata been out? Michelle, you're our Miata expert. Any idea?
1990.
I know, but like each different model of the, how often do they come up with a new model?
They go about every 10 years for generations. Yeah. They're only on their fourth generation.
So they amortize the cost of development over the course of 10 years and sort of pay for it. But anyway.
I get it. I have a third gen.
That's cool.
Okay. Called an NC, and now they're in the ND.
NDs.
Well, right. NDs, but they call them RFs and MX-5s, and you know, they're still Miatas.
Those Miata guys just love, all car guys like throwing all, oh, you have an E36? Yeah, that's not as good as the E30. Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, I.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, okay, back to the Supra. The Supra Final Edition Mark V is out now. In fact, they introduced it at the Long Beach Grand Prix this year, and it's on sale right now. The starting price for it, it ain't cheap, $56,695 to start. But think about it this way. You're getting a BMW coupe for that price. Just think of it that way. That's how you justify it for yourself.
Oh,
and it's fun to drive. Now, what they did with this final edition, they basically tuned it up so that it goes faster, drives more precisely through corners. They did a whole bunch of stuff to make it a better performer. You still have the straight six making 382 horsepower, 368 pound feet in a car that weighs about 3,400 pounds, less than 3,400 if you get the manual, a little bit more if you get the 8-speed automatic. So you got a power to weight ratio, or weight to power ratio for all you statisticians out there, 8.87 pounds per horsepower. That gives it a 0 to 60 time as quick as 3.9 seconds with the automatic, 4.2 with the manual. It's quite an acceleration. It's a fun little car. You also get an extra inch of disc brake on the front. So you have 14.7 inch Brembos up front, 13.6 in the rear. I mean, that's significant stopping power.
Mm-hmm.
And then they revised the electronically controlled shocks, the differential controls, camber angles. There's a new front anti-roll bar, strengthened the bushings. They strengthened the rubber mounts for the rear subframe. They've got a stronger underbody brace, and they even modified the algorithms that control the stability control. And it's all riding on 19-inch forged aluminum wheels. They are Michelin Pilot Sport 4s. I don't want to just spit out all the performance figures, but I will say that they let me drive it around Sonoma Racetrack. Not all 11 turns. They only let me do like 1 through 10. I don't know. Maybe there were insurance concerns. And it was everybody. It wasn't just me who was limited. So it was a blast. You get out there. You go down to the end of the pit straight. Guy waves you out. And you're going up the hill through toward turn 2. And it just felt great. You're going up through second gear, third gear. You can't see over the top of that first turn. Anybody who has driven the track knows that. So you're on blind faith. You're believing in the Lord Jesus to guide you through. And you're accelerating, you're drifting out to the outside. Very stable platform to drive and a blast. So I enjoyed it, and I think you will too. $58,695 at your Toyota dealer. That's all the time we have right now. We want to thank our good buddy, Jack Walsworth from AutoNews.com and Automotive News. We want to thank, of course, Michelle Spencer. Maybe Carl Brower will come back next week. We want to thank Wendell and Master Control. Thank you, Wendell. Let's stick around and listen to Rhapsody in Black, music that sounds great on your car audio. And remember, you should go to our Facebook page, which is too long to say here, and we're out of time. But we'll see you next week here on The Car Show.
I'm John Santana. Next time on Cinema Score, William Bolcom shares his score for Illuminata. And he's always full of stories.
Anyway, 2 weeks later, he shows up for the recording session. And he says, well, I have to tell you, I'm going to be conducting this whole film score with a broken rib. And I wish I had thought of it. I said, well, you know, some people use a baton. But I didn't think of it.
Sunday evening at 5 here on KPFK. You rely on KPFK for the voices and perspectives you just don't find anywhere else. Now we're asking you to become a key part of KPFK's future. We're on a mission to bring in 500 new sustaining members in our fall fund drive, which starts this coming Tuesday, September 23rd. Your ongoing support as a sustaining member for as little as $5 a month helps us to get there. It's the easiest and most powerful way to make your commitment, providing the reliable funding the station needs to stay strong. Please join our fall fund drive for 500 new members today at kpfk.org/donate. Thank you and welcome.
Hi, this is Jim Hightower. You're listening to KPFK 90. This is Jim Hightower. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, a station that puts the public airwaves to work for the public. Imagine.